There's something I have to ask you.
May I ask you a question?
That is a question. Would you like to ask me another one?
Pamela Slim is a seasoned coach and writer who helps frustrated employees in corporate jobs break out and start their own business. Her blog, Escape from Cubicle Nation, is one of the top career and marketing blogs on the web. Her experience teaching martial arts for 10 years to thousands of students, including former gang members, has helped her clients deal with fear head-on. A world traveler, Pam speaks four languages and has lived and worked in Europe and South America. Pam's book, Escape from Cubicle Nation, From Corporate Prisoner to Thriving Entrepreneur, was released in spring 2009. Pam is married with three kids and lives in Mesa, Arizona. Pam, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. How are you today?
I am doing so well, and thanks for having me.
It is our treat, for sure.
Yeah, we're excited.
Well, we have to ask, first of all, okay, because your blog and your book, the tagline is From Corporate Prisoner to Thriving Entrepreneur. Do you think that anyone can or should be an entrepreneur? I know you're very passionate about it. How can someone tell if they're cut out for it? And do you ever advise people that they should just stay in the cubicle? How does that work?
Well, yes. I think we can all get really caught up in terms of looking for the perfect work configuration, right? Those that are in a happily employed in a job will say, "Your guys are crazy. Why would you quit a job?" And those people who may be longtime entrepreneurs, especially in this economy, can look longingly to those, you know, in a cube, or have really strong feelings. And so my foundational feeling about work in general is that really what it's about is understanding yourself and your interests and your passions and the kinds of content topics that you're interested in, and then finding a work configuration that really matches and enhances who you really are. So for some people, that's going to be working in a corporation because they really like to have that structure. I wouldn't really say stability because these days, what is stable, right? I mean, and I think that's, again, a strategy that each of us can use in managing our careers is not assuming that one is more stable than the other. But, you know, if you think about it, just as you have a whole bunch of different options available to you, one of them is working for yourself. And then in working for yourself, you have tons of different configurations. It can just give people different ways of looking at how it is that they want to take care of themselves and their family. So I think if we look at it that way, then it's more the question of, for which people at which points in their lives are ready to take on some of the challenges and opportunities of entrepreneurship. And I've seen people from a huge variety of different backgrounds be very successful at that, and also people from a huge variety of backgrounds also not be so successful.
Sure.
Okay. So say someone is... maybe we have a listener that is trying to figure out what she wants to be when she grows up. Maybe she recently lost her job, or maybe, you know, toying with the idea of launching out on her own. She's hopeful, but of course there's that fear thing going on. She's scared maybe to take the leap. She's unsure if she has what it takes. What advice would you give to her that thinks maybe she wants to kind of move in that direction?
My advice for anyone these days that is thinking about starting a business is to test often and fail fast, to think about doing things in really small little turtle steps, and as opposed to taking a gigantic leap off of a cliff, which is often how we think about things, right? You're employed, you have a job, and you think, I'm going to make the big Jerry Maguire exit. So if you've seen Jerry Maguire and grab the goldfish and stand on a desk and never work for the man again. And I mean, it's great. I think we all have those fantasies at different points of our life. Maybe a little bit more prudent approach is to just keep that as a fantasy in your mind and begin testing and trying your business idea on the side in little tiny bits. And so some examples of that are a lot of people who I know that might be looking at consulting or in coaching. You know, they might be actually learning in a certification program or really interested in studying something about consulting. One of the best ways to start to test it is just to do it, to start to work with some small projects on the side, see A, how it feels to actually do that work, and B, see if you feel like you're really delivering something of real value to the people that you're working with, knowing that when you first start, there's no way you're going to be perfect. It's going to be clunky. It's going to be awkward. But the way in which you both gain expertise and experience and also test the waters to see if you do have a viable business idea is not by spending all your time planning it's by actually getting out in the market and testing and trying. It goes in hand with planning. It's not that you don't do planning, but you make an assumption in your plan, and then you go out there and you test it and try it. And that, to me, is a much it actually ends up breaking down a lot of the fear, because you're not worried about that huge leap over over the cliff. You're just worried about, can I identify one person that I could have an hour-long consulting conversation with, and then, you know, stop at the end of that, not have an expectation of success or failure, just make make a specific goal to have that conversation and see how it goes. And that can reduce a lot of anxiety. And it's actually a way to get your business up and running quicker and more successfully in the long run.
That is great advice.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of people that had, you know, companies that are successful, you look back, it's like, oh, they started in their garage from, you know, 6 to midnight.
It was a hobby on the side. And
right. So that makes a lot of sense. Definitely. Yeah. What would you say, Pamela, is the most important childlike trait that an entrepreneur needs to possess in order to be successful? Our thing is all about looking at life through the lens of this childlike perspective. So what would you say about that?
Yeah, I completely believe in that perspective. And the one of the things I talked about in my book is beginner mind, which is, of course, not my concept, but something that is a perspective where you – thinking about it through the eyes of the child. I have a 4-year-old, Joshua, and which is so much fun, right? To just view life through his eyes.
Yeah.
And when he sees something new for the first time, he just gets so excited. You know, it's like, wow, what is this? And gets really excited about something new. We were driving down the road the other day, and he goes, you know, Mom, why is the sky blue? You know, why are the stoplights green? And then, you know, why are cars yellow? And, of course, you know, as a parent, it's like the classic question, how the hell am I going to answer this question? But it really is with that wonder, and it makes me really stop and say, yeah, well, why are they? Like, how did that actually happen? That's really interesting. And that frame, that perspective, that beginner mind, that childlike vision is so, so important when you're an entrepreneur, because part of what you want to see is the wonder in the world and the opportunities. And you might look at something and say, classic example, thinking about maybe a few years ago, was standing in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles. I was in San Francisco. Probably any Department of Motor Vehicles around, you know, any part of the U.S. had the same kind of thing. It was just this horrible thing where you're standing in line and didn't make any sense. You'd have to spend 3 hours away from work in order to, like, renew your driver's license or something. And when you're standing in line, you can stand in line and just get totally frustrated, or you can stand in line with beginner mind and say, why is it that we actually have to stand in line? And what could actually make this a better experience? Or how could we streamline this? Or how could things be, you know, be helped? And I think it was somebody that had that kind of beginner mind that started to move a lot of the transactions from the Department of Motor Vehicles onto the web, where now for most of the things you have to do, you can do them remotely, which of course helps them out and as an organization, and also helps the experience at the Department of Motor Vehicles to be better.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, it's such a kind of mundane experience, but you can look at anything in your market, in your field, and just wonder and also have that joy and delight. It's something I also really try to keep myself grounded in when I'm working with clients, is it's really easy to get caught up in numbers or, you know, certain success metrics. Like, I want to have this number of clients, and I need to be doing this, and as soon as I, you know, write the book or build this program, it's on to the next one. And when you stop sometimes and think about it, like, even just after having one conversation with somebody where they truly get a really deep insight or they make a major breakthrough in their thinking, I mean, that's pretty darn profound. And that can actually impact everything about their life. It can impact how it is that they parent. It can impact, you know, the course of their whole life and generations to come. You know, sometimes with little different shifts. If you think about how you might have had certain shifts in thinking in your life that really started a whole new direction. So it's like, when you think about it from that wonder, it's from a very calm place. It's very present focused. It's not looking at things the way they have been done, but looking at possibilities and looking at the newness and excitement of things. That's, I think, a perfect perspective to have as an entrepreneur.
I can definitely say that having our daughter Lucy, our first child last December, was a subtle little direction change for us. Yeah, that changed some things.
Subtle? Are you being truthful here?
Sarcastic.
A little wrinkle in the plans, yeah. Well, we mentioned that you have a book out, came out earlier this year, and I want to congratulate you on that. I would say if anyone listening has ever considered escaping the corporate prison, as it were, this is the book for you, because what's cool is it not only deals with kind of the nuts and bolts how-to stuff, but it also deals with the scary emotional issues, which you all already kind of touched on. So congrats on that. And writing a book is definitely a labor of love. What turned out to be your favorite aspect of your book when it was all said and done?
I think my favorite part was the being able to share stories. So that's something to me that's just the funnest part of what I do, is being able to just be a small part of a lot of people's lives at a certain moment when they're trying to do something. And there are just so many great moments and so many great stories. There's one of the stories in the book that was a conversation that I had with a coach who was trying to put some focus on branding her coaching business, right? Which sounds like just, you know, kind of a boring thing, right? Not too terribly exciting in that.
Sure.
Right. But we had this conversation where we were talking, and her first thought was she was going to call it Stop and Smell the Roses. That was something that was really important to her as a concept as a coach. And I always tease my coach buddies, right, being a trained life coach myself, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have some of these happy, fluffy coach terms. We love to kind of trip through the tulips with the unicorns and the rainbows, you know, and have fun, right? That's part of being a life coach. We have a right to do that. But to the outside market, that doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not as provocative and exciting. It's not going to drive people in droves to come work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we were having the conversation about Stop and Smell the Roses, and I said, well, what happens when somebody stops and smells the roses? And she said, well, they kind of pay more attention, they're more present. I said, yeah, and then, you know, then what happens? She said, well, they kind of live with less regret. I was like, okay, I got a little chill when she said regret, because that was a powerful word. And I said, well, tell me more about that regret. What are some examples of people that you work with that don't want to live with regret? And she said, well, you know what? I work with a lot of men that are in their 50s, and basically they don't want to be that guy in the Cats in the Cradle song.
Hmm.
And if anybody from my generation, I'm 42, if anybody remembers, I think it's Harry Chaplin's song, The Cats in the Cradle, about this, or anybody who's a parent, that's this whole song about, you know, a father who was really not present for his kids, and then, you know, his kids grew up and all of a sudden he wanted to be with them and they weren't available anymore.
Yeah.
It has such power, and it has such connection with that particular segment of the market that she wanted to work with. And I remember when I was having the call with her to talk about this topic, it really gave me the chills, and I got that feeling like, oh my God, I have to share this. This is an example of that perfectly it typifies what it is that I'm trying to tell people. It's one thing to say, you know, don't try not to have the happy, fluffy songs, but when you can really zoom in and say, this is the difference that it makes when you start to get to the heart of what's really going on in your target market, and you really want to understand what are they truly concerned with, and how are you really going to provide relief to them and do something that's valuable, that's where you really have to dig deeper and do something on their terms. So it's hard to describe, but sometimes just little stories like that, little shifts that people make or insights, just were the most delightful part of writing the book, is being able to share all these stories of bravery. And, you know, I the way I wrote the book wasn't just about business. It was also about some earlier life experiences that I had teaching martial arts and things like that. So it was fun to be able to capture them in one place.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a neat thing to be able to share those stories for others to you know, learn from, definitely. Now, Jason and I are always talking about and noticing how, you know, the media and just the feel of the world in general right now, especially in the United States, is just that doom and gloom with the economy, and it's just everywhere. You know,
a lot of fear.
We're very we're not turning on the news too much these days just to keep ourselves positive, you know. But what do you see as the biggest opportunity resulting from this tough economy right now, especially kind of being the heart of talking with people day to day?
I think the opportunity is all that it is that we're facing right now are just a different series of constraints.
Mm.
Right? We're really forced to look at our life and our business with a with a specific set of constraints, in that it's not as easy to just jump into a pool of money and kind of do something, you know, half-hearted that can make a living and be okay with it. You really have to be very focused on what are the real opportunities in the market. Who are you really? What are your very, very strong gifts? And how can you make absolutely sure that you're providing value in your work, either as an employee or as an entrepreneur? Hmm. Now, that can be scary, right? When it means that there's scarcity, there aren't as many jobs, or theoretically there aren't as many people to purchase your products or services. But from a developmental perspective, from a learning perspective, what better parameters could there be to amp up all of our gains, mm-hmm. to make us really take seriously what it is that we're doing and really focus on value? Mm-hmm. And I think if we look at any group of people, any generation that has been faced with hardship, like some of our grandparents maybe, or parents for some that lived through the Depression, people that I know in my work traveling through South America that often can live in the most what many people would consider dire consequences, but have a totally creative perspective on life about how to actually make things happen, yeah. and how to make things grow. And I know I never want to downplay the difficulty and the pain that it can cause when you're dealing with an economic challenge. I shared in the book, and I just shared in a post I wrote yesterday, in my own family, my husband has a construction business, and it's been a hard year. I mean, it's been very hard, and it can be very scary. So I don't want to downplay that and say, you know, we have it good, and it's, you know, good for all of us just to get a big jolt and, you know, realize how the rest of the world lives. I mean, there's a part of it which is true in the big macro picture, you know, for us as humankind, that's still in the big picture compared to most of the rest of the world, we're still really doing fine, right?
Yep.
But it doesn't help when you're sitting back and you've never faced a situation where you can't pay your mortgage, you know, or for some people where they're looking at, they've always had a job, they've always been employed, and they truly do not see where it is possible to get another job. I mean, that can be very scary, and it's life-altering. The choice is, how do you want it to be the defining moment of your life? And are you going to really reach out and get support, which I think is out there, in order to make it be one of those wonderful points of challenge where you end up really growing in a good way? Or are you just going to completely collapse under the fear and totally shrink and not, you know, not meet that opportunity? And so that's a choice that all of us have. And the world is going to pretty much line up and demonstrate for you kind of whatever perspective that you give it. So if you think, you know, there's scarcity, we're all screwed, you know, there are no jobs, there are no opportunities, and you're thinking that all the time, that's pretty much, you know, how it's going to end up for you, because that's how you're going to be. If you have that thought, it's going to make you feel pretty crappy, right? Shrink back.
Right.
And it's going to make you act in certain ways where, if it's anything like a lot of folks I run into, you'll be more tentative, you won't be as secure, it'll make you, you know, feel a lot more maybe suspicious or competitive as opposed to being collaborative, and that means that you're going to have fewer opportunities. As opposed to if you say, wow, okay, we have huge constraints, how can I be creative, how can I start to connect with people maybe I haven't connected with before, and find the pockets of opportunity, and find the places where I can really make a difference. And maybe, and I've found this for a lot of people that I've been talking to, for some, it's really been that moment where they say, all right, I'm not going to wait anymore. This thing that I've been working on and that I've wanted to do for a long time, I'm going to do it. What else do I have to lose?
That's great. That's great advice. That, you know, the idea of constraints is actually so important. As an artist, it's one of those things that people think, people who are creative, they love to have, you know, carte blanche. You know, you walk into an art supply store and say, create art. But it's actually more effective to have some constraints of, okay, I'm going to use this medium, I'm going to try to paint this or capture this emotion, I have to have it done by this time, that actually kind of jump starts the creative juices to actually move in a direction. And so I think that's a neat point about the constraints that we're living under with this situation, looking at it as a positive.
Exactly. Yeah, I really see that. And you're right. I mean, that's sometimes where the most fun creative things, you know, come to be. If we're all just given endless opportunity to sit back and create the next big idea, well, maybe I should speak for myself. Unless I have a deadline, nothing is going to get done. So all of a sudden, right, having a deadline or knowing that I have to deliver something within a certain budget, it means that I actually get it done. So that is the opportunity.
So you are a coach. You're dealing with advice all the time. What is the worst piece of advice you've ever been given? People ask, like, what's the best piece? What's the worst?
Oh, the worst piece of advice. I have to kind of dig for that. You know, and the reason I say that is because I've had some really pretty fantastic mentors in most of my career as an employee. Probably the one that springs to mind was a client who I love dearly. He taught me many, many things about business. But he would often tell me that I was just too nice, like I was just, you know, kind of too collaborative, that I should have a little bit harder edge. I was teaching a presentation skills class along with another teacher who was, in my opinion, pretty brutal. She would give feedback to people and they'd kind of leave cowering with their tail between their legs.
Yeah.
And my perspective about learning is that that's not an effective way to learn. We can certainly go to the, you know, boot camp school of learning, and it can scare some of us straight to get something done. But to really anchor in learning, it can be really clear and specific. It's not just skirting it and saying, you know, yes, you were great, you did a great presentation, when it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that it ever needed to get to the place of actually scaring people or tearing them down. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, spent some time saying basically that I really needed to do that, like in some ways to act more in that kind of strong, brutal way in order to be more accepted in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt it in every fiber of my being that that was not the right direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't follow that advice, and it's panned out really well. And of course, you know, in the poetic justice, a number of years later, he kind of came back and said, you know what, I think you were right.
That's pretty rare that you get that moment.
Well, he was a dear friend, right? We had a really great relationship and that we could kind of banter back and forth. But he had great financial success, not always the kind of success in life, right, in friendship or in marriage and those kind of things. So that's I think, in the big picture where he started to see the connection sometimes between things.
So we're new parents. This is sort of a question just for us, although I'm sure other people listening will enjoy it. Any advice to offer in regards to balancing a family and a business? I mean, we're about 7 months into this so far, and we're doing okay. But what, you have three kids, right?
I do, and I have a 21-month-old and a 4-year-old, and then Jeffrey is 23, and he's my bonus son. I call him son, but he came as a package deal when I married my husband.
Okay.
So he's, but he's, you know, very much part of the family, and parenting a 20-something is a whole different ball of wax, right?
Yeah.
And it's wonderful, but there's definitely, you know, there's components to it, so I get to kind of see both, you know, both sides of the parenting extremes. And so I think what I've found is, especially when we're in businesses where, and I'm assuming for you guys, knowing that we connected on Twitter and social media, that you're actively using social media as a way to connect with your people and share information and get people to know who you are, that it is really easy for it just to bleed into your overall life and not really to make a distinction between family time and work time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not clocking in and out as an entrepreneur like you would an office, you might not physically be going to an office.
Right.
And so you work from home. And the advantage is that you can be physically present around for your kids, but you might have your laptop down, you know, downstairs in the kitchen and or, you know, when you're doing other stuff. And what I found, and I've talked to other parents about this, is that you can start to get that really split attention. So you're actually not fully focused on your business, and you're also not fully focused on your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my son Josh is the perfect beacon of truth, because he comes out and says very specifically, Mom, when he was younger, he would take my face and physically move it towards him, you know, like, Mom, look at me. And what I learned is I sometimes I could have that nagging feeling of like, I should be doing something, I should be checking email or, you know, be on Twitter. And yet what he really taught me is when I am with my family, to be with my family. And I personally have very rarely in 13 years of working for myself worked on the weekends. I've always made that as a pretty clear thing. Nowadays, you know, I might check in a little bit on Twitter or on email, but I make it clear to my clients I don't work on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I had big corporate, you know, stuff going on, save the occasional drama that we all go through, right? Is, you know, some big thing needs to happen, and so you're at Kinko's, you know, for 18 hours straight or something.
Yeah.
For the most part, I like to set really clear boundaries and say, when the workday is over, make it over. And then, for example, when the kids go to sleep, then that, you know, that's a time where I personally did a lot of writing or checking up on email and so forth. So that's, I think, the biggest thing to watch out for. When they're really little, they don't necessarily pay attention as much, and that can be a wonderful thing. You can get a lot done and kind of, you know, be in the same room. But that would be my advice. Don't just let it bleed over into everything. So you kind of have half attention to your business and half attention to your kids. They really start to notice it.
Great point. So we talk a lot about this disease called adultitis. And as most of us get older, adultitis depletes a lot of the passion, creativity, the enthusiasm that we had when we were kids. So you obviously strike us as someone who has done a really good job of holding on to her childlike side. So what is your favorite way to escape adulthood, and how do you manage to keep the adult out of your soup, as we like to say?
Yes. Well, I do love that. I do love the childlike perspective. And for me, it's actually, it's maybe adult-like in terms of it's the nature of my work, but I love to write. I've always loved to read when I was little, and I've always loved to write. And so when I can really just escape creatively into my work and kind of channel that beginner mind, that openness, that excitement, really having fun, having some humor in what it is that I'm doing. That's where I feel like I'm really bringing my childlike self. It's also the perspective of trying to really just speak truthfully and share whatever it is that's on my mind in the way that children often do, of not necessarily censoring everything or trying to put a specific spin on things. Certainly we all have our filters, right? You don't have to completely let it all hang out. You know, some things you maintain just for your own private life and so forth. If people don't know, have to know every single detail of what's going on. But I like to keep that perspective, and then to be engaged in creative activities. Certainly having little kids, that is a perfectly great way in order to stay involved with childlike activities, of reading children's books, of doing creative projects. I like to be right alongside my son if we're doing something. You know, he loves to paint or play with clay or do things like that, and just really let myself get into that space and see it from his perspective. And I think I've been a little bit too much of an adult this year, just because it's been quite a year, you know, pace-wise, and with things going in my husband's business, I've probably been in a clip of activity that's a little bit more than I would like. But I normally really like to do other things that connect me with my body. I love to, I don't think I've worked out in 4 years since I had my child, but normally I used to love to kickbox and do Pilates and, you know, just kind of enjoy being physical and having time for myself. That's probably the way that I stay connected. But I feel it. I feel that childlike joy when I'm doing something that I love, like writing, and where I'm able to really just tell the kind of stories that I really enjoy telling. That's when I feel my childlike voice. And I'm actually looking right now at a picture I have on my wall above my computer. It's a picture my dad took of me. My dad's a photographer that my mom sent to me on my 40th birthday that I hadn't seen in so long. And I'm probably about 2 years old, and I'm sitting at our dining room table with a piece of paper and a pencil writing. And it hit me just so strongly when I saw that picture, because for years I never even considered myself a writer. I didn't even know that's what direction my path would take me, but that's the way it took me when I started my blog. So it's kind of a reminder to me that truly is my childlike self, is really being absorbed in writing.
Well, that totally ties in, and maybe this kind of answers our last question, but we always like to ask those that we interview the same kind of last question, and it ties into when you were little. And so basically, when you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up, if you can remember that?
I wanted to be a teacher when I grew up. That was my mom was trained as a teacher. She didn't teach for very long, and my grandmother was a first grade teacher. And I remember when I was in first grade, I was the helper for the kindergarten class.
Aww.
So I would go over and help. And that was just always something that really excited me. And so that's really been woven into much of what I've done through time. I mean, you kind of, you know, teaching, coaching, to me it's all kind of the mm-hmm. same part of the picture of working with people and maybe sharing what it is that I know and, you know, helping people make progress. So that's, I think that was an earliest memory that I have is of being a teacher.
So that whole coach and writer thing's working out for you pretty good then, huh?
It's working out pretty good. It's kind of amazing, yeah.
That's good. Awesome. Well, Pamela, we've taken enough of your time. We want to just thank you again for making time out of your busy schedule to be away from your business and your family and chat with us, and we really appreciate the time, and hopefully we look forward to talking to you down the line sometime.
Well, I look forward to it, too. And just so you know, you didn't take my time at all. You really enhanced it. So I'm always happy to have these conversations. So thanks for inviting me.
You bet.
All right. Well, safe travels, and we'll connect with you again soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks. Bye, Pam.
Bye-bye.
Bye.